kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I am arguably better than I was the last time I did the podcast.
You're probably better than me, too. So
I don't know that I would go that far, but I am not quite as whiny and complaining about things as I was.
You're always whiny and complaining.
That's because I'm horribly broken.
Well, I'm getting there too. Ashley got me like really sick. I think I'm getting a sinus infection. So
she has been struggling. I saw on Facebook.
Yeah. So hopefully you're packed with questions today because my voice is not going to last long.
Oh boy. Let's go see if there's any questions on the Steam community.
Questions, because we have a guest joining us this week. Greg, I can't even talk. Jesus Christ. This is going to be a good one. Greg Lobanov, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Nice to meet you, Joe and Cole. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to have you here. You are here to talk about your game Wandersong. For those who don't know what the game is, give us a quick sales pitch on it.
Okie dokie. It is a musical adventure game where you play as a bard. You basically can run around and sing anytime you want, and things in the world react to your music. And it tells the story of an impending apocalypse. And you're just like a useless little singer, and you're going to try to do your best to stop that from happening. Yeah.
This is the cutest and happiest game about an apocalypse I've ever seen.
Yeah. I really like that aspect of it. I feel like if it was just a cute and happy game and there was no apocalypse, it'd be really boring. But when the apocalypse is going to happen and you're just trying to have fun with it, kind of gives everything a really nice, a different kind of color to it.
Color, because it's bright and colorful.
Yes. Yeah, I used every single color for this game.
It's nice to see a game that, even though it's music-based, color has its place, and you didn't shy away. You guys weren't like, just to follow up on dystopias. that part didn't make it into the show, but oh well. Just because it's pre-apocalyptic and the shit's about to hit the fan doesn't mean that everybody is sad and gloomy and dark.
Mm. Yeah, the game's really just all about like making noise and being loud and being happy and like just trying to make the world a happier place no matter how bad things seem to be. That's kind of the idea.
And it really seems like everything is going wrong in this game. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody you run into, something's going wrong, there's a problem somewhere, and you, the magical bard, have to save the day for everybody. And it is just such a happy game.
Yeah, it kept coming up, like, I don't know, yeah, I've never seen a game that was like this, where, you know, you're using your voice to solve problems. So every idea I had, I just thought, like, it just kept being basically comedy kept coming up so naturally in it because, you know, all you can do is sing. And then you like encounter these people who have like very complicated problems sometimes, or very like big problems. And it always just was fun and interesting to try to figure out like, okay, so like all you can do is sing, but this person's like having an emotional crisis because their mom's dead. Like, how do you come into this situation and like make their life a bit better? The game's a lot about like that tension too. I kept finding ways to like express that and explore that I had a lot of fun with.
And the answer to every question in the game is singing.
Yes. It's always singing. Somehow it works.
So where did the idea for the, go ahead, Cole.
Terrible. Was it a challenge to come up with a song for every solution, or was it just like you knew in your heart what you wanted it to be for each one?
It definitely was a lot of challenge. So for one thing, I didn't write all the music for this game. I worked with a composer, and I definitely like put him through the works. Like, Yeah, and there are a lot of layers of like problem solving that have to happen, because for one thing, when you get into like situations where it's like, oh my gosh, like this is a really complicated problem, how does a person who can only sing solve it? Like, there's a lot of like acrobatics that the story and gameplay have to go through sometimes to to make that stuff make sense and to give the player something like meaningful to do that's like useful in that situation. And then after that's figured out, then like getting the music figured out was a whole other thing, which thankfully I only had to partly do. But a lot of the time it's like, you know, I would come to the composer and I'd be like, okay, so like I need a song that combines like these two different music genres, and it has to like be structured in such a way that I can like split up this part and this part, and this part can change like, you know, this far in, and it can only be this long, and it has to be kind of like sad but a little bit like happy. Anyway, yeah, if we can get it by Monday, that'd be awesome. And he'd be like, well, that sounds impossible, and then he'd disappear for a couple of days and he'd be like, okay, I figured it out.
That's one of those instances where you're writing off the email for that, and you're in your head, you're like, oh, I am getting my money's worth out of this composer right now.
Yeah. The composer's name was Gordon McLattery, by the way. He goes by Sean the Pit. And yeah, the guy's like phenomenal. So smart. Like, if there's anything he's good at, especially it seems like he's just amazing at taking like any stupid request you can imagine and just making it work. And I really appreciated that for this game, because like this game needed a lot of flexibility in basically every aspect to happen. Yeah, very grateful.
So let's start at the beginning. Where did the idea for this game come from?
Yeah, so it kind of was a lot of different things happening at the same time. The thing that I always mention is that like before working on this game, I lived on my bicycle for 5 months and I actually rode across the United States.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of like camping, adventuring. Yeah. And that was like a really awesome life-changing experience. And the game kind of like, I would say the seed of the game kind of came from that experience of just like going on this weird whimsical journey and just feeling like a small person in a big scary world and trying to express that. And plus like, I just love music. I mean, you know, who doesn't, but I really do like music a lot. And I was just really inspired by like, I don't know, the feeling of like singing and just listening to music, like, you know, like driving in a car and listening to music really loud and just like screaming out the window, like that kind of energy mixed into a video game about going on an adventure across the world. Just, yeah, all this stuff that was kind of floating around in my head at the same time, kind of like magically combined into this thing that now exists.
You sound like me with driving in a car. I piss my wife off all the time by just singing and like drumming along on the steering wheel. I'll hit the brake in time with the bass drum. She gets so pissed off with me. It's beautiful.
That's totally me. Yeah, I go crazy for that stuff. I just love it. Yeah, it's the best. So yeah, like, and you know, I never like played a game about like music or singing really in that way before. Like, there's music games, but there's definitely no game that I could think of that was just about like that feeling, that experience. And it is like such an experience, right? To like be there in the moment and like making noise and feeling like, I don't know, just getting really excited about what you're listening to and singing along. Like, there's just no game about that. So, and I wanted to make the game that was about that. If that makes sense.
Speaking of your game, Root Beer is My Jam in our chat, we're on Twitch right now, asked what game we were talking about, and Cole mentioned Wandersong, and the reply is just all caps, I freaking love that game.
And then music note emojis and three heart emojis.
Yes.
So that seems like pretty high praise. So then I asked if they had any questions for you, and Root Beer is My Jam said, marry me.
That's really sweet.
So you have a fan.
Yeah, this game has this kind of like, I don't know, this like special effect on people. Like, we're definitely not the most popular game by any measure. Like, if I mean, not to say that we're not like popular at all, but just like, you know, we're not like the biggest game ever, basically, right? Like, I still think of us as kind of like a weird small indie game. If someone's heard of Wandersong, like, I'm always surprised. But when people have heard of it, like the people who do actually play it, it seems to just like get into them. Like, people who play the game, like, really, really go crazy for it. So we have this just, like, you know, it's like 10 people on Twitter, but they're always tweeting about Wandersong. It's like that kind of thing. Like just that tiny, extremely
dedicated cult following.
Yes, yes.
And yeah. Apparently half of it is Root Beer is my jam.
Yeah, half, like a third is that person. Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate that. Like, that was definitely something that I actually remember, like, saying out loud to, like, my best friend, like, before the game came out. I was like, all I really want is just, like, one person to play the game and just completely love it. Like, if just one person really loves this game, like, to bits, like, I'll be super happy, even if they're the only person who plays this game. And that seems to be the case. So I'm really glad that came through.
Mission accomplished.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very similar to how I felt when I got your email and you asked me if I was the Joe Cam behind Bound Together.
Oh my gosh.
That made my fucking day when you asked that. Like, I read it on the show last week and I was just beaming on stream. I was so excited that someone still remembers that project and still enjoys that project all these years later.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, I super do. I don't want to overstay my welcome with, you know, stuff, but like, when that came out in like 2006 or something, right?
Yeah. Something like that.
Okay. So, I don't want to make you feel, I feel like I'm going to say something that's going to make someone feel old.
And I already feel old. So it's fine. Bring it on.
It's fine.
But when that went up, I was in middle school or high school or something. And that was actually, like, in my memory, it was like the first time that I had music that was like my music, you know, like not like my parents' music, but I was on the internet and like found this like sweet album of like Earthbound remixes, and I totally fell in love with it. And like, I like, you know, it was a big moment for me. It was like, whoa, like I can have my own music taste. Like, my parents don't like this at all. Like, no one I know likes this. Like, not that they, you know, I mean, I did play it for my parents quite a bit and they did turn out to like it. But what I mean is just like it was something that I found myself, right? Like, and that was like weirdly really big special thing in like my history with like music and just like self-development and stuff. And also, weirdly enough, one of the artists on that album, who now goes by Jason Covenant but used to go by Prophecy, I met him through that album. Like, I listened to his music on that album and I really liked it, and I went like on his like forums and I hung out with him and I met him, and then he like did the soundtrack for my first like three games or something like that, like a bunch of my first games, which I like only exist basically because I met that person and he gave me music to like make games with, like that. It's like that level of like in my history. So I'm really grateful.
That is really so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. And I still love those songs. Like, now it's I can't even separate, like, I don't know how to put this. I mean, I feel this way about Earthbound too, where it's just like, I play that game. I love that game so much. Like, at this point now, like, if someone asks me, like, do I like Earthbound? It's like, it's not even about if I like it or not. It's like, I don't even know the difference, like, where the boundary is between myself and this other thing, right? So, like I kind of feel that way about that album too, where it's just like so deep in my like history. Like, I lived those songs for so long. Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's special to me, I guess, is what I'm saying. So thank you.
No, thank you for enjoying it. It made my day when, you know, 13, 14 years later, someone just remembered who I am based on my email.
Right.
That felt so cool to just have someone ask me, hey, are you that guy? And yeah. Oh my God. You remember me.
Joe just assumes everybody hates what he does, so it's even better.
Well, everybody does hate what I do.
Well, clearly not.
I like it.
That was a previous life.
You did at least one good thing in your almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Good job.
That's about the limit. One good thing. Because this show is not it.
And yet we're almost into the 600s.
Yeah, we're getting there. Holy shit, we're getting there. Oh my Lord.
Yeah, so I was pretty impressed at the dedication to the podcast. That's awesome.
Yeah, we have more episodes than we have total listens ever.
Wow.
Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. Just a little bit.
Right.
Oh man. So back to your game. Tell us some more about about the creation of this game, the art style. I love the visual style of this game. Where did it come from?
Thank you. Well, so I did all the art for the game. And yeah, I guess when I very, very first started, like I had kind of the basic idea and I was just playing with it. I actually, the first thing I tried was doing, pixel art actually, cause that was just like the default, like video game art style. But then like, I just noticed really quickly that like, this game was really nice for, if it was nice for any reason, it was nice because it had like such a strong personality to it that it kind of felt very much like a lot of decisions, like it felt like it was basically asking me to do things for it. But so like this, the art style being an example where like I was trying out pixel art with this game and it was just so obvious right away that it was just a bad fit because the game was so much about like being loud and expressing yourself, like as a player, like playing the game, you want to be expressive and you want to be like, I don't know. Yeah. Like make your own thing. And when like pixel art games are nice, but they have this tendency to, because you know, it's all based on like square shapes and clear structure and repeating patterns and tiles and stuff. It has this feeling of just kind of like being very structured and square. And it was, the game just like wanted to like break out of that box so hard. So I started playing with like totally other different ideas instead. And I was kind of inspired by like Kirby's Epic Yarn, just in like how crazy that style is. I kind of went in my own weird way about it, but yeah, the premise is just like trying to make it so that like a really simple style that I could use to like draw every single screen by hand. That was what I had landed on because it felt like if you saw like the same like pattern repeated a couple times already, it would kind of feel like, it would feel like a video game and not like this like handmade crafted explosive thing.
Yeah, so it would just have a copy paste feel to it.
Yeah, exactly. And this game was just like so exactly about the opposite of that. So I had to figure out some way where I could like draw everything uniquely, and the like that weird like jaggedy paper cutout style actually worked out really well because I made this like editor for the game basically that let me just like draw the shapes like inside the game really, really quickly. So I could just like, you know, like add a new screen to the game and just start drawing it like freehand, just like click, 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 click. I'd be able to make screens really fast, but also really unique. Like every screen, like I had no choice but to like make it by hand every time. And then the animation style was just like also made to fit that, where the characters are really like, you know, they just use a few, I'm not sure if you know the terminology, but like just a few frames. Like they're very, very simple, like just a few poses for any animation, which kind of makes them like jaggedy, but also like it made it so that it was really easy to make lots of animations. So like if I want to add a new animation to the game, you know, it's just a couple of drawings and then this character does like this new thing. And so the game ended up being way more about like adding lots of pieces like that, you know, not any given animation is very, very simple. It's not like a gorgeous, like beautiful flowing thing, but there's just so many of them and there's so many things that can happen. And like every button you press, like makes something happen that's unique. And yeah, it was like so much more about that. So yeah, the art style kind of came from like that. Plus I really just like colors. I think they're the best. So colors, I just went ham. Cool, yeah. I don't know.
I'm on board.
Yeah.
Speaking of animations, tell us about the dances. I am in love with the goofy dances your character can do in the game. Like, where did they come from and what the hell are they for?
Man, they are not for anything. And actually, they were...
They're for achievements.
Yeah. One of the very last things we added to the game, like, it was like basically already done. And I think the circumstance was actually that the game was basically done. I was basically going to like launch it and then some things came up and we decided we were going to come out on the Switch at the same time as like everything else. And that meant that the release time got pushed back by quite a bit because we were working on just like porting the game to consoles and stuff. Because that happened, I was just like sitting on this game, like basically working on boring shit. And then I like wanted something fun to do to like pass the time when I wasn't doing that. So that's where the dances came from. It's just like, oh, like what's this like one more thing I could add to the game that's really cool. And then it was, at first, seemed like a really stupid idea. It was just like, okay, well, this is actually a lot of work and adds nothing to the game whatsoever. Like literally, like, because the game was already done. So, like, there's nothing that the dancers could add, right? Like, there's no, like, quest or, you know, whatever, right? Like, it's just going to be to look like this. But I had, like, one in, and I think I was, like, because we were also testing, like, you know, for, like, pre-launch stuff, like, looking for bugs or whatever. And, like, we had, like, one dance in. and someone tested it and like just was like, it was like just one dance in the game. That person was so happy. Like the entire time they played, as soon as they found out that there was a button that let them do that, they just like held it down the whole time until their hand was cramping. And they were like asking, like, is there a way you can like, get an option that's just always be on? Like, and like, just, they were just laughing like all the time. Like, you know, every conversation they would just start dancing in. And it was just like so obvious basically. Right. It was like, okay, obviously this feature is actually amazing and I'm an idiot. and clearly we need more of these. So then I just went crazy on those two, like just adding a bunch of them. And yeah, I mean, now, like after seeing them in action and then like having like so much fun, like adding dances in, yeah, I can totally see the appeal. It's funny like how much that really expresses like the I keep saying the game's all about this, but it really is like the dances kind of help. I think, you know, I don't know, I'm talking about in circles around myself. Like, I think okay, this is a really weird game, right? Like I don't know any games that are kind of like this one. I think the dances are one thing really early on that I think do a good job of communicating to the player, like, exactly what you're in for. like, you know, it's just this useless thing. It's stupid. It's just for fun. It adds nothing, right? It's just to look silly. And the game is so much about, like, that, you know, like trying to get you into that headspace where you're willing to just, like, play and have fun and look stupid and not care so much about, like, failure, success, or, like, points you're scoring, achievement, or whatever, right? It's just about, like, having fun in the moment and making noise and expressing yourself, right? Like, you, like, just being you. I feel like the dances are basically, like, they fit so well into that, like, that narrative, and they do such a good job, I think, of kind of, like, showing players to play that way, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, I'm now super glad that they're in the game. Like, they add so much, I would say, in a weird way, even though in another way they add nothing at all.
It very much reminded me of the silly walks that you can do in West of Loathing. I'm not sure if you played that one.
I did after Wondersong. Like, I didn't get to play anything until Wondersong came out because I was so busy, and then it came out and I played everything. So yeah, I did play West of Loathing, and I was laughing at those too. Like, I love that concept so much, obviously. I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
So the game first came out on the Switch last year. What all platforms did it release on last year?
In 2018, we came out on PC, Mac, and Switch. That was like all at the same time. And then we were working on, and so they came out with, so we had PlayStation came out just early this year. And then we had physical releases come out in like the fall. And now Xbox is coming out just in time for the end of the year. And now we're on every console, which is so exciting. Like, before this game came out, I never thought I would be on a console like at all. It just was so like, I don't know, it just seemed like like that's the thing that cool games do and like real games do, and I was obviously not making a cool or real game. I was just making this stinky like singing thing. And we've just been so lucky and blessed, I guess, to like, I don't have all these opportunities and for people to like the game as much as they have and to get to put it in all these consoles. And yeah, I don't know. Like, it's, yeah, I actually have to say, like, with Xbox especially, like, the people who are behind, like, Xbox, who do, like, the games outreach and stuff, were so excited about Wondersong in a way that I never expected. Like, and nobody else, like, on any platform is, like, these people, like, this is, like, our relationship with them is not just, like, handshake, like, business, like, you know, oh, I will put my game on your platform, like, yes, we will market it, the thing. They are, like, crazy about Wondersong. Like, they came to us, like, frothing at the mouth, like, we want your game on our console so bad, please, can we have it, like, your game is just, like, so special to us, like, we love it so much, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it was that kind of thing. Like, I've never had that before. So it was really special, I guess, to have that moment with them, and also, yeah, to finally, like, to have this game on the console, because this was actually a long time coming, like, before we were on, or around the same time when you were coming on PlayStation. Like, this was, like, something you were working on, and it just kept falling through, basically, until now. but yeah, like, it means a lot. It's special to me to have a game that's on every console, and you have a game on console at all, and also, yeah, to have all this stuff happen, it's just so cool. So, yeah.
Not only are you finally on Xbox, but you're on Xbox Game Pass as well.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm really happy about that too, because it just means that so many people are going to get to play the game. Like, if anything, this might be like the single biggest, like, like change in audience for us, right? Like we've always been kind of like a small niche indie game, but now like I don't know how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are just gonna like have the game on their hard drive for free and hopefully we'll check it out. And that just is awesome for us. Like that just means like, yeah, like so many people are gonna get to experience the game, and yeah, I'm just really excited about that too. I hope they like it.
How did you go about getting on Game Pass? Is that something you inquired about, or is that something Microsoft was like, hey, we have this service called Game Pass. Would you be interested in having your game on it? I'm not sure what you're allowed to talk about.
I don't know what I'm allowed to talk about either. And I also don't know like what it's like for other people. But I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, like they asked us point blank. They were just like, hey, like we love your game. Please put on our console. Can we have it on Game Pass? Like all this stuff, basically just like, we want your game. We want everyone to play it. Like, that kind of thing. I think we had a kind of a special relationship with the people who are behind that stuff. But yeah, in our case, they kind of came and asked us about it. And after talking to them about it, like it just seemed like an awesome fit for us. Because like, yeah, I don't know, it's exactly what we want. Like just getting the game to as many people as possible. And like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I love it. I really like that idea. So yeah, that's how.
And I think there's going to be a ton of people who play it. I know Game Pass, it seems any new game that launches on Game Pass, people go apeshit for, because it's right. It's such a special, unique thing that it's a brand new release that if you're a subscriber, you get to play it basically for free.
Right. Yeah. 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 So I'm really excited just to see people's reactions to it and stuff. I'm always curious about the way that like this game is going to land with people, because yeah, again, because it's just so weird. So like, you know, it's like there's nothing that can prepare you for what you're going to experience when you play this thing. And that just, you know, it just makes me interested, because I mean, for example, before the game came out, I really honestly thought that this was going to be like a really divisive game. Like I expected to get like a lot. I expected that some people are going to like it a lot. And I expected that some people were just going to hate it like crazy. Like they were going to play the first 5 minutes of it and just be like, this fucking sucks. I cannot believe someone made this, like this piece of crap. Like this is not what I want at all. You know, like I just expected that person. And I have to say, like, I'm almost shocked at how little of that person I've seen. Like, I know they're out there. I know there's someone out there who's going to play this game and hate it, but I haven't found them yet. and I'm,
that's
I'm,
a good
I'm,
thing.
I'm always waiting for when that person finally shows up. So I'm also curious, I guess, about that. And then just about, yeah, like when this game hits like such a huge audience at once, like how are they going to feel about it? Like, are they going to like it? Is it going to be overwhelmingly positive? Like, I think part of what's been happening is that the game really self-selects, because it's so loud and proud about just like what it is, that, you know, if someone goes out of there, goes the extent of like buying the game and, you know, hearing about the game, like watching the trailer, buying the game, playing it, all that stuff. Like by the time they're there, they've pretty much already know what they're in for. But something like this, it's just like any random Joe Schmo is just going to have this game on their console, and like they're going to check it out just because they can. And like, how is that person going to feel about it? Is what I'm really curious about and interested and stuff. You know, like I just think it's fun. I really like being that game. You know, like that weird thing on your hard drive where you're like, man, this is weird. Like, what is this? And you play, and you're like, this is really weird. What is going on? I wanna be that game for some people. Like I'm excited for that.
Also weird are our listeners. Carnage and Awesome Prime have both dropped 10 biddies in chat, so I gotta take a second for our sound clip to play.
Drop it, bits!
We have a sound clip from our friend George that screams dropping bits when people drop bits. So I gotta take 3 seconds to let George do his thing.
Okay.
just have to explain that to guests, because otherwise there's an awkward silence and they don't know what the hell's happening.
Oh, okay. So wait, I can't hear him.
No, you can't.
Okay. All right.
No, it plays over the stream. It's dumb. It's our show's dumb.
I mean, I've been on Twitch and I know the walk. I know the rules.
Yeah, the biddies. Gotta love the biddies. So thanks, Carnage, and thanks, Prime, for dropping biddies. Prime has a vendetta against us. You know the little cup that has the bits in it?
Mm-hmm.
He is intent on dropping single bits until it fills up and slows down my computer to a crawl.
Oh.
Yeah, he's having fun breaking things at my expense, and it's I guess it pays off. Literally.
You know? Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, at least you're making money.
Making 10 cents. And he cheers another 15 biddies. So, oh god, Prime, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Dropping bits.
As if on cue, he drops more bits. Nice. Oh man, Cole, what kind of questions do you have? Because I feel like I'm hogging up all the questions. Uh-oh, her kid must be home. We got the silence. Cole is busy. Oh, Cole, what are you doing over there? Let's see. The beginning of the game, I found a little secret off to the left. What kind of secrets do you have hidden in the game?
We have, like, the main, like, the, well, how do I put this? So there's a couple different, like, the dances are basically the one thing that's, like, an obvious collectible secret thing. There's, like, one per chapter of the game, and it's usually kind of, like, a substantial, like, off-the-beaten-path thing you have to do. This game, like, it's just, yeah, everything about it is just so weird. So, like, there's a lot of stuff in this game that's very easy to miss. I wouldn't necessarily call them secrets, because the game doesn't, like, there's no, aside from the dances, and even those, like, it really doesn't fit this description. Like, there's nothing in the game really that you, like, collect, you know? Like, there's no, like, running around picking up stuff. There's no inventory. There's no currency or money or shops or, like, proper achievements or really, like, anything like that. So, like, the game is just full of stuff that you can, like, go and find and do. Like, interactions you can have with characters, like, things that interact with you in special ways that, like, you know, only if you're, like, standing in the right place and doing the right thing, you'll know, you know, like, all kinds of stuff like that. But they're not really, like, labeled or rewarded. It's just, like, rich with experiences, if that makes sense. So in some ways, like, I filled the game with a lot of stuff that is kind of like a secret. but in terms of, like, what people, you know, a capital S secrets, there's not, like, that many. Except there is at the very, very end. So that thing that you found, that comes back, like, very, that's like the one, like, big, like, secret. That is, like, very end of the game, like, come back to the beginning thing that you can do. And I guess I won't say anything else about it other than, like, people tend to figure out only by, like, Googling and, like, sharing information online, I think. So, yeah, like, it felt like we had to do something like that, you know, like, just some, like, huge, stupid thing that is, like, really, really hard to figure out. But, yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah, I found that secret at the beginning, and they're like, oh, you got to come back at the very end. I'm like, ah, son of a bitch, I guess I'm playing this all the way to the end, aren't I? And I'm having fun with it. I'm loving the game. I'm having a great time with it. I don't know how far I am. I just started Act 3. I've only had a small amount of time with it so far, but I am determined to finish this one. I am having a blast with it.
That's awesome. You're at a really interesting point. So, like, I think the first two acts, it kind of lulls you into a sense of, I guess I shouldn't spoil anything because you're not there yet.
I'll bring it on. I don't care.
You're coming up to a really dramatic change in the game, I guess is what I'll say. I won't say anything else besides that. But, like, a lot of people I noticed, like, that's actually, like, that's one thing when I'm in, like, our reviews on Steam, for example, like, you can definitely notice the line of, like, people who are like, I don't really get this game, it's not that interesting, and usually it's like they've played to that part. A lot of people play only to that part and they're like, I love this game. Some people play to that part and they're like, I don't, like, this doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. And it's like, when you, the people who get past that point are usually the ones who are like, can't turn back. They're like, oh, I see, I love this. there's a point that's still ahead of you that seems to be that moment for a lot of people. So that's, you're at a fun point, I guess is what I'm saying.
You have me more excited about the game now, and I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, I would be really curious to get a reaction on that. But even, yeah, like, I mean, I think I made the game, so I'm surprised. But I think the first two chapters are sweet, too, just in a different way.
I enjoyed starting my own band. I enjoy how much dialogue you have in the game. You can talk to people multiple times. Every time they have something new to say, it feels like just so much love and care went into the writing of this game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as far as I can say, like, yes, like, I did put a lot of work into it. Like, getting the writing, the tone and pacing and everything right was, like, one of my, like, biggest, like, challenges and tasks for this game, just because, yeah, I mean, like, I guess, like, you're still relatively early on, but, like, the you know, because by the time you're at the end of the game, it's meant to feel like you've traveled over the entire world, right?
Yeah.
And for it to really feel like that, like, the game had to be really, like, full and rich with just, like, people to meet and places to visit and that kind of thing. And so, like, the dialogue had to kind of fit that too, right? Where it's like you want, like, everywhere you go just to feel like you're meeting, you know, it's like you leave a place and technically, you know, you maybe have only met like 10 or 20 people, but it has to feel like, man, I know like everyone in that town, right? So it was kind of going after that feeling of just like trying to give you, like, you know, trying to be as generous as possible basically, and give you like as much of that richness as possible. And yeah, I guess another thing about it too is like kind of along that line of making the player feel expressive. One way that games do that I feel like that isn't intuitive is like giving the player lots of things that they can miss. Actually, to me, is a really good way to make your game experience feel really like personal and unique. Because when you get, you know, like when you can see that there's like, oh, I can talk to this person again, or oh, I can walk over and talk to that person instead, or I can just ignore this person, or only talk to them once, or, you know, I talked to them twice and I've heard, you know, like there's so many, like when there's all those options in front of you just about how you interact and how deep you go with different characters or who you interact with, like in this weird like subtle way, it actually does start to feel like, you know, you're making decisions about like who to spend time with and who you want to be friends with and like who you want to get to know better and who you don't really care about that much, or who just doesn't look interesting or does look interesting, right? And like when you're making decisions that way, like it puts you in that headspace of just feeling like your experience is really personal, and that like, yeah, like you're in charge of like, you know, deciding like what, you know, what your world is, and then who your friends are and that kind of thing. Like it's like, yeah, it's it kind of feels maybe like reading too deep into it, but on the other hand, like that's, I have to do that because I made it. So, but yeah, I feel like that was really important to kind of give that feeling as well, if that makes any kind of sense. Just like, yeah, giving you this rich thing so that you can really feel your footprint in there, right? Like what you chose to do and experience is kind of part of your story, if that makes sense. Yeah.
I asked if there's any listener questions. Carnage is asking what kind of achievements are in the game. I noticed that all of them except one are secret achievements, which I know is Cole's, that's the bane of her existence. She hates secret achievements. Is she back yet? Cole, are you here yet? No. No, she's still not here.
Yeah, there's so you said you can see the achievements. Can you see like how many there are on Xbox, or it only shows you the ones?
It shows you how many there are, and then it just says this secret is achievement. Keep playing to unlock it. And the only one that's revealed is still basically saying that it's a secret achievement.
Right. So there are like, I don't remember how many we were allowed to put on Xbox, but there are like technically quite a few. And they're tied to something really specific in the story that like I actually would love to tell you about, but I also don't want to spoil because I think when you get there you'll have a lot of fun.
Okay.
It's a all tease. I can say is, yeah, it's something really good. I guess I'll say that.
Yeah, I know. I just hit Act 3 and I've only unlocked one, so I'm curious if I'm missing anything. I'm paranoid. I've talked to everyone that I could.
You're not missing any. There's okay. Yeah, man, I want to tell you so bad, but I won't. But you haven't missed anything. You haven't missed anything. It's ahead of you. yeah. I guess I will say, like, it's like the idea of achievements in this game are so strange, like kind of following along that the point I've been making about how like this game is just so unlike other games because it's so much more about like the expression and like the experience and the story and characters and that kind of thing. So like, maybe this will make sense to you, but to me, like, you know, I was thinking about like, like, you know, cause it was like, okay, like we have to add achievements to the game. Like this is like mandatory for some part. And so I was imagining, like, okay, like what can an achievement in this game be? And it's like, for example, if you like talk to this, like a character like three times and it was like, bloop, you got an achievement, like, oh, you talked to this character a bunch of times, or like, oh, like you helped this character like grow a flower, or oh, like you helped this character like find her boyfriend, or, you know, like whatever your little side thing you do. To me, like imagining that experience of like you do something to help somebody and then you get like a little blip achievement for it, it kind of felt like in any other game, I wouldn't think about it so much. But especially for this game, because it's so much about that expression and like character relationship, it just felt like it would feel really like dehumanizing, basically, if that makes any kind of sense. Like if you got a little reward for helping somebody, then like there's a certain kind of player who would just start helping people and start talking to everybody, like would have to start playing the game super thoroughly and trying to find everything they could do, because they would be like, you know, they'd want to get all the achievements, right? Like they would be doing it for completion reasons, even if they, like, whether or not they actually enjoyed it or like were curious about stuff, right?
That's some of our listeners.
Right. But what we want, what I really wanted was, like, you know, I want people to explore the story of the game and the characters, you know, purely of their own curiosity and interest. And if they're not, like, interested in the story, like, if they're not getting all out of it, or they're just not, like, they don't really care about certain characters, like, I didn't want them to have to, like, do those interactions and go through the rope, you know, like, go through the motions of doing that stuff to get achievements, because it just felt like, I don't know, like, you know, because I think the game is super playable and fun, you know, even if you don't care about the story that much. Or at least that was my thinking going into it, was like, if you just want to walk through and just play with music and like solve the puzzles and get to the next thing, you know, and just move through the story like beat for beat without explaining too much, like I think that's a totally valid way to play. And I don't think that you should feel like you're missing, you know, it's like all that extra stuff isn't like a missing or not missing thing. To me, it's more just like a, you know, like you're just expressing yourself and digging into stuff you're curious about. Like that to me doesn't, I don't know, the idea of achievements just don't quite fit to me and that kind of experience. And maybe I'm thinking about it a bit weird, and maybe I should just put achievements on stuff, but it just didn't feel right. So I did find a place to put achievements that I felt really good about, that I think really suit the game meaningfully. And yeah, again, I won't say anything about it, but like, it's actually something that like we get a lot, like if we get any angry comments, it's always about the achievements. It's like people really? Who like strongly agree or disagree about how we implemented them. But I totally feel confident in our decision about it. Like it's there were actually a couple articles that went up, like journalists, like people who like played the game, and like on some sites the only thing they had written was just like, well, so this is Game Wonder Song, and like the way they did achievements is really fucking weird. Like check this out. Like so if nothing else, like it's interesting. And
Cole is in chat saying something's going on with her mic. It's not working. No, Cole, we can't hear you.
Oh, no. That's too bad.
Who knows? So something's broken.
She should try turning it off and back on again.
Yeah, that's what she's going to do. She said she's going to restart the PC.
Got so. It. That's
fuck it. Bad. Do it live. That's what this show's all about. But yeah, I love when people have fun with the achievements and they do something different. Everyone could do an achievement for do this in the story, do this in the story, do this in the story. But when you have fun and you do something unique with them, that's what I like to see.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Then you're going to like this because that's what we did. I mean,
Everything you tell me about the game just has me more excited to get more time into it.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. I'm glad. I'm always worried because I always feel like I'm just going off on, like, this. I mean, this game, it is really weird. So, like, everything about it, I just, you know, the more I talk about it, I just feel like some fucking, you know, cave hermit weirdo who's just like, I don't know. Like, I really, like, with everything, every new problem in this game, I feel like I had to approach it in a new way because, you know, I was trying to do something with this game that I hadn't seen done before. So, like, yeah, I don't know. It just didn't feel right to solve any problems the same way that you would solve them in other games. And that's something that, like, the more I talk about it, I just feel like a fucking weirdo. So I'm trying to explain to you, like, like my weird fucking lore on why, you know, like, just any outside, I just feel like they're listening to me talk, like, come on, like, do you really have to talk for 10 minutes about why you didn't put an achievement, you know? But I do, because it's important, damn it. Like, I thought about this.
You put effort into them. You put thought and effort into them. So damn it, you're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I am. I am going to talk about it.
Root Beer's My Jam asked if you're going to have a Funko Pop of the Bard. And I personally want to know if you're going to make plushies.
We get that question now and then. And I got to tell you, I'd really like to. But with plushies, like, or Funko Pops, I don't know anything about. I would, if they came to me and they're like, we will do a Bard Funko Pop, I'd be like, yes. I love merch so much. Like, I love merch maybe more than I like making games. I would do anything. But yeah, like I kind of have been hinting at before, our game is at a weird middle point where, like, we have very energetic fans, but there aren't that many of them. So when it comes to things that require, like sheer force of number, like plushies, for example, like, you need a lot of people to want to buy those for that to make cost-effective sense to produce them.
Yeah.
And we're just not at that point. Like, I know if we made, you know, like, however many plushies, right? Like, people, like, all of our fans would buy it. Like, every single person who's played our game would buy a plushie. But if you total up on most people, it might not be enough to actually, like, still make sense to make them. So
I want a plushie.
Hey, she's back. Awesome. Hey.
The power of turning it off and back on again.
Nice. But this is actually something that, yeah, by going into the Game Pass, like, maybe things, you know, it's like, it's always like every new thing that happens is like, well, maybe, like, this is going to be a moment for us and our game is going to kind of like hit a bigger audience, you know, that kind of thing. Like, if there's like a big growth in audience and demand, then like I would super do it. Like, I would in an instant do it. Like, you know, I would love to. I've been kind of trying to, but it's just like, yeah, it's not the easiest thing to just like do.
Do you have any merch for the game at all?
We do. We are on Fangamer, which was a super dream come true. We have t-shirts, and we're also on the Yeti. So we have like pins, we have t-shirts, and we have prints. And I'm actually not sure what's all in stock right now. So the game's kind of been out for about a year, and it's, yeah, always in that weird floating thing where it's like, yeah, like, you know, the new platform comes out, a bunch of merch gets sold, and like things kind of slow down a bit. And yeah, so I'm not sure actually how much is in stock right now, but probably we should think about restocking because probably we're going to move stuff soon. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, so I'm gonna look for something. I doubt you'll have shirts in my size, but fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know what your size is, but like, yeah, I mean, like, if not, then I think for on all those sites, you can always put in your email, and they'll, you know, when they get enough demand, like, they'll just restock stuff. So definitely look into that, because yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm biased. I think our merch is sweet. I think our merch might be better than the game. I mean, I don't know. I like it quite a bit. We've got this pin on the Yeti that's quite popular. That we're like, it's like a pin, but with a rainbow wheel on it and the bard. And the pin actually spins. Like, you can rotate the little rainbow wheel.
That's awesome.
It's really silly, but like, yeah, that's like easily our best selling little item. People just love it. And I think our shirt designs are awesome too. Like, we just got really lucky. We worked with awesome people on it. So yeah, I love merch. In conclusion,
now I have to look this shit up because now I need to spend money on your game. So, Cole, since you're finally back, what kind of questions do you have?
You know, I had one and then I got all caught in the fuck up of my mic and then I lost my question. Oh, and no. I've just been sitting here like, what the fuck was I going to ask? I know he's going to ask what I was going to ask and I don't remember.
Shoot.
It involved the rainbow wheel too, because you mentioned it, and I was like, oh, it was that, and I can't pull the rest of it. I'm so sad.
Yeah. Proud of you.
I'm a professional.
Awesome Prime's asking if you have any kind of online plans for the game. I'm not sure what you could do with online with this game, but it's a question, I'm asking it.
We had some ideas actually before the game came out.
One person could sing, and one could dance.
Yeah.
we're not going to do anything with it, mostly because like I just don't want to go through the rigmarole of like. I guess maybe you don't know this, but like when you're going through like console certification, if you have stuff that has, you know, like if there's anything like any online features where you can like communicate with another player or send something to a stranger or receive something from a stranger. Like things change quite a bit for the way your game gets treated by things like ratings boards and certification and technical requirements and privacy, like, you know, EU, like privacy laws, you know, data collection, just like everything you can imagine that sucks to think about all happens at the same time. So we're not doing it. But if I was going to do something online, I really liked the idea of being able to, like save like songs or photos. I imagine like in Dark Souls, you know how you see like little like blips for like other players leaving notes for you. I imagine doing something like that where like as you walk around the game, you'd see little blips, and if you like click them, you'd see like someone like a recording of someone like singing a song. You know, so if you figure out like a little tune you liked, you could like record it and just like put it up for other people to see, or like combine that with like walking, doing a little dance or walking around or something. You know, like just a little performance that you could give to other people. I thought that'd be really cool. But it's like, it is cool, but it's like just like a little bit cool and not quite cool enough for like the amount that it would like damage my life to like actually get that working and in. So it's not going to happen. But if things were different, then maybe. If I could like just do that, then I would totally just do that.
Oh shit, one of the shirts on the Yeti actually is in my size, so I'm going to be buying that.
Nice. Sweet.
5XL, okay. Awesome. Tarp size, industrial grade tarp size. Nice. That's what I wear. And the pin is up there for pre-order.
Sweet, 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 yeah.
Oh my god, there's a GIF of it spinning. That is amazing.
Yep. Thank you to the folks at the Yeti. They are like marketing geniuses. They that was complete, like, well, like some of the merch was kind of like stuff that I wanted to do, but the spinning bar pin is like completely their idea. Like they can be like, hey, what if we made this bar pin spin? And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. To be honest, like even at the time I was like, I don't know, but like it's so popular. People love that shit so much. So like, yeah, like they clearly knew what they were doing.
That is awesome. That is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. So what is in your future? What kind of games are you working on next? Is Xbox in your plans for that?
Xbox is super, I love Xbox. Like we had an awesome time working with them on this game. Like I would love to keep working with them on stuff. I'm already very, very deep into my next game, which is called Chicory, A Colorful Tale. I also have merch for that game on the Yeti, actually. And that came into Kickstarter earlier this year. That did really well. So we're just kind of like plowing through that right now. And that game is that's a game about drawing and painting in kind of the same way that Wondersong is about like music and singing. So in Chicory, you play as like a dog with a magic paintbrush, and it's basically a Zelda game. You explore the world, but the entire screen is like a black and white canvas, and you can just like paint and color all over it any way you want. And things in the world like will react to your drawings and colors in different ways. So it's kind of like puzzle solving, and then like there's like animal people that you can meet and befriend, and like things to collect, and just all it's just a super goofy game, kind of like Wondersong, but also completely different. But yeah, I'm just really loving this like creative adventure like genre thing that I've fallen into that I just don't see done, but is really fun to explore, like making games that are all about like player creativity and exploration and expressing yourself and all that jam. Just making like peaceful, cozy, nice, kind-hearted things, goofy things for sure. Yeah, I'm all about it. For people who like Wondersong, I very strongly think that the next game is going to really appeal as well. Although it is also really different. but yeah, I'm excited about that right now for sure.
What kind of release window is that looking to be?
It will be a while. I think our current announcement is it's going to happen in 2020X. So sometime in the next 10 years, it will definitely come out, I think.
2020X. So it's Mega Man level.
It's the Mega Man. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be announcing more about it, like, you know, sooner than that. But yeah, we're still kind of in the early stages with it. I would love to come to Xbox, and I'd love to come to anything. But yeah, nothing for sure yet, really. Like, nothing we can say, I guess. So yeah, that's all for now on that.
Nice. Do you have any appearance plans, like any kind of PAX or MAGFest plans coming up?
We actually were just at PAX West, and I think we're pretty regulars at PAX West because we live quite close by. But other than that, I'm not sure. Actually, we haven't really planned for the next year yet. So I wish I knew. I wish I was organized enough to just give you an answer, but I totally don't. Probably not at least for the next few months.
No MAGFest. Damn.
Yeah, I have never. How do you mention it? Well, I should think. I would think about it. I've never been to MAGFest. I actually used to. So I grew up in Philadelphia. So I used to live like super close to it. It would have been super easy for me to go there. Now I live in Vancouver, so it's super far away. But I've always kind of wanted to go, but just like it's never quite worked out. But man, now that you mention it, like maybe I should think about it. I don't know. A lot of my friends go, and like I've heard it's fucking awesome. Like
yeah, MAGFest is the shit.
Yeah. So if I do end up going, I'll let you know. But as of right now, I don't have plans to.
Now, I know they have an indie game section there, so maybe when Chicory is getting close to release, you could show up there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no doubt.
Root Beer's My Jam is saying there's a Canadian indie game show in Ottawa.
Oh, that's cool. That's like actually really, really far from Vancouver, so it's really no easier than on a MAGFest, but that's good to know.
Canada's all the same place, isn't it?
Yeah, you think so.
It's a tiny little place like Rhode Island.
Everywhere you want to go.
Right. In terms of population, basically, but there's way more space between everybody
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about with the game that we didn't bring up?
I don't think so. I think I've probably blabbed quite enough about it, to be honest. For sure, by now, you're all sick of hearing about it.
Not at all.
I really appreciate it. I'm really glad that you're loving it as much as you are. I'm definitely, I'm excited for you to see what's coming up and, yeah, all that stuff. Thanks for having me on the show and everything. It's really sweet. And, yeah, I mean, it's awesome meeting you. Thanks again for organizing Bound Together and also organizing this.
Thank you for enjoying Bound Together. You inspired me to play some on the show recently. Speaking of music to play on the show, is the soundtrack for Wandersong available?
Oh, yes, it is. And it is massive. It is, 5 hours long and, 100-something songs. So,
oh, shit.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super great. For all kinds of podcast background stuff. And yeah, it's actually, I think, available right now on vinyl. I think because I'm not sure if it's sold out yet, but if you go to the website, we have it available for vinyl right now too. And that's pretty cool. I have it here in my house and it looks beautiful.
Is it available on Bandcamp at all? I see apparently Soundtrack Volume 1 is available on Steam, but I don't have the game on Steam to pick that up.
The soundtrack is available on Bandcamp and on Spotify. The vinyls are available through Ghost Ramp. Ghost Ramp Records are the ones who are publishing it. And that link is on our, if you go to our website, which is wanderso.ng, that has all the links to places you can get the soundtrack and stuff like that. And merch, actually, and consoles and all that kind of stuff.
That is awesome. Yeah. I will definitely have to track down the soundtrack and give it some love on the show. I see there's even a remix album for it.
Yeah. That was actually, we had that organized to the day the game came out. And we we just between me and the composer, we had all these friends who also do indie game music. So there's quite a few quite big names on that remix album actually. And they're really good remixes. There's one. Okay. Well, I love them all. There's one that's really spectacular and interesting that was done by John Robert Matz, and that one is all live performance. He did music from the Pirate Act, which is the one that you're in right now, and it's all live musicians performing this incredible orchestral arrangement of this really silly song in the game. It's awesome. I mean, all of it's really awesome. We also have Lena Rain, who did the music on Celeste. She's the feature, the first track on there. And I'm working
badass.
With her now on Badass indeed. She's awesome. And I'm working with her now on my next game, Chicory. So you can look forward to that soundtrack being awesome. I am also very lucky that I get the soundtrack while she's working on it. So I get to listen to it all the time, and it's fucking dope. And I cannot wait for everyone else to hear it because it's great.
That is awesome. Well, we are going to let you get going. When Chicory is ready to go, come back on the show and chat with us again because I am excited to see what you do next.
Sweet. Yeah, thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll play some music and we'll be back with more show. Do you have any final words to end this?
I hope you play Wandersong and I hope you like it. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Greg for coming on and chatting with us. That was a blast.
It was. It would have been better for me if my mic hadn't been shitting the bed, but
very
we're fine.
True.
We're good. It's fine.
I can only imagine what you were thinking when it's like, Cole, are you still there? Yeah, I'm here. I have a question about the, nah, I guess she's not here. Fuck it. Whatever. Let's continue on.
I thought I was getting the Carnage treatment. Like, I was like, oh, Joe's cosplaying anyway, what are you, Carnage today, and I can't get a word in edgewise, goddamn. And then I kept thinking, did I fuck up? Am I confused about what the mute button is again?
Maybe.
I've done that in the past. And so, like, I kept unmuting and muting and unmuting.
Your shit was borked.
Yeah, and the only way I could fix it was a full-on restart, and clearly I don't know that it's safe to... I need to... like file a complaint on Newegg about that shitty RAM and get my money back.
Yeah.
That's
well,
sad,
contact them and see if they give you a refund from China and English and everything else. But we have a lot more show we got to take care of. Are you ready to discuss some news?
Yes.
You didn't sound very convincing.
I mean, I was trying to get a deep breath when you said it, and then I was stuck on it. And I had to just roll with it. But yeah, I'm ready for news.
All right. Game Pass. A lot of Game Pass news this week. Like a shitload of Game Pass news this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Hit me.
All right. This week alone, we got Halo Reach on Game Pass through the Master Chief Collection.
Yep.
So if you have Game Pass Ultimate. Yeah. And PC and Xbox.
Yeah.
December 5th, we got Naruto to Boruto, Shinobi Striker, and My Friend Pedro, which launched to Game Pass.
Oh, so excited for My Friend Pedro. Like, I was so pissy when it wasn't being released to Xbox at all. And I was like, what are they trying to do to me? And here they fixed it. They fixed their malfunction.
Yep.
And I am happy.
Yeah, I'm excited to give that one a go. On the 6th, Friday, we are getting Demon's Tilt. And some game called Wandersang. I don't know. I never heard of it before.
Wandersong.
Yeah, that sounds right. Launching direct to Game Pass. Greg's going to listen to this. He's going to be like, you assholes. Spent an hour talking about the game. Like a Wandersongay. Then next week on the 12th, we're getting eFootball PES 2020. So we lost 2019 and now 2020 is joining. So it seems like they're keeping the soccer going on Game Pass. The Division, which I'm sure you're excited about.
It was in there at one point before the Division 2 came out, but now it has come back.
Yes, it is back. And joining it, another game you were excited about, Overcooked 2, is joining Game Pass.
Yes, I love Overcooked. I'm so glad that Overcooked 2 is in Game Pass. Because now there's more people I can taunt to play with me.
Yes. We still have to play with Jacob again.
So he can throw rice.
Yes.
Me and number one are working on getting our completion back. And since only one person needs to have the DLC for it to work, then you can help us get the DLC back.
Dark Mika says she's willing to play the Division if you help 100% it.
You would need, well, the base completion on it is not bad. It's the DLC that will send you into thousands of hours. So,
oh, God.
Depends on how 100% you want to be. There used to be a glitch for the survival mode because there's an achievement for extracting 100 items, which doesn't sound like a whole lot until you realize that you can only carry 5 items with you at a time. Ugh. And you may not always fill your bag, and you may not always get out with it.
You may die.
Yeah. Even in PvE, people can grief you and spawn more hunters to kill you so that they can take your shit. There used to be a glitch that you could do because survival kind of worked like a battle royale almost, in that you spawned in with nothing, but you also had to take medicine to keep your disease at bay. And you used to be able to, like, as long as you had one pill, you could share it around your whole group and just take it and like glitch it so that you would drop it as soon as you took it, then you get the effect of it and still be able to share it.
You want to know what sucks? No Time just did another gift sub for Dark Mika, and it missed the cup again.
It missed. It missed.
Wide left. One of these days, it's going to land. I don't know why it's missing. I don't know how to control that.
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Take your money.
You can't play games that require more than a 20-hour commitment. I have close to 3,000 hours in the first division. I don't have quite as much in the Division 2, but also Studa is not as around as much now that he's got a job promotion, so I don't have somebody to run through it with. And we haven't even got to touch the second round of DLC for it yet.
And then Prime dropping more biddies. God damn it. They're dropping slowly. So while they're dropping, the last game joining Game Pass on the 12th, launching is Pathologic 2.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'd imagine you're looking forward to that. A horror game?
I have been very adamant about not looking up a lot of information about it. I haven't watched any trailers. I want to hit it blind. But I know the basic premise. And so I'm like, I'm going to play that.
But that's not all the Game Pass news, because a bunch of games are coming or have already come to PC Game Pass. They didn't have dates listed for these, so I'm just going to ramble them off. And I know a bunch of them already launched on there. A couple of them might not be out yet, but Age of Wonders Planetfall, Demon's Tilt, which is launching on Game Pass, Europa Universalis 4, Faria Farming Sim 17, Human Fall Flat, Metro Last Light Redux, My Friend Pedro, which launched to Game Pass, and Pathologic 2, which is going to be launching to Game Pass on PC.
Nice.
I told you, a lot of Game Pass news, and that's not it, because apparently Phil Spencer accidentally let something slip during an Extra Life stream. He said, I thought Control was really good. It didn't reach enough people, so I'm glad to see it's coming into Game Pass, so hopefully more people will play it, because it's a game that should be played from our friends at Remedy. Remedy has since come out saying that there's no announcements regarding Game Pass at the time, and the information was wrong.
As of yet.
Yes. So it seems like Phil Spencer might have let that slip early.
Yeah. I suspect it was supposed to be announced at the Game Awards, and shit happened.
Yeah.
It happens to the best of us. It does make you feel decidedly better about fucking up an embargo when you realize that Phil Spencer does it too.
Yeah. Yeah, that it would be cool to see Control hit Game Pass, though. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be soon, but I think it will happen.
Probably. Maybe in January sometime. Who knows?
Yeah. Or the ever-busy February.
Yeah.
February is just not chaotic enough. Let's have some more.
Yeah. Do you want to know how much more chaotic February is going to get?
God damn it, no.
Vanquish and Bayonetta are both getting remastered on February 18th, according to a recently revealed store page on Xbox. It says that they will both run at 4K and 60 frames per second on the X. I would imagine a PS4 release is going to exist as well once Sega actually confirms that it exists. But for now, all we know is that it's going to show up on Xbox February 18th.
I'm just mad we can't have Bayonetta 2.
Who knows? Maybe this might lead to some kind of deal with Nintendo. How Nintendo and Microsoft are buddy buddy. Maybe we'll see Bayonetta 2 jump over to Xbox.
I hope so.
It'd be cool.
Exclusivity is bad, Nintendo. Although they've made their whole market on exclusivity and forced scarcity, so they probably don't give a fuck what I say.
But yeah, fun store leaks. Another store leak is on PlayStation Network Store. Cover art for Resident Evil 3 appeared. So
really?
this unannounced title might be releasing sooner than later if they have cover art showing on their store page.
Yeah.
And it looks similar to the Resident Evil 2 cover art, so I imagine it is legitimate. Yeah.
Well, that would be interesting to see.
Indeed. Some bad news. CD Projekt Red is ending all console support for Gwent.
Wow.
Yeah. They have some method in place. I didn't read all the details on it, where they're going to allow you to get your account carried over to the PC version, I think on GOG, I think they were saying. But it's a bummer that they're basically giving up on it on console.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some other bad news. There are reports that a bunch of developers have left Visual Concepts and that the WWE 2K21 budget has been slashed due to the poor reception of this year's title, which you could only blame them for.
Yeah. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, they released a shit show of a game, and it sucks that a bunch of people left, and reportedly they're leaving just to get the stink off their resume.
Yeah. I don't know that that's gonna, they're gonna be quite so lucky. It's probably, like, what are you gonna do if they've worked there for a long time? Are they gonna just go, no, I didn't have any employment history for the last 7 years. Didn't work on a damn thing. Sat at home with my hand in my pants. Because that would be better than saying, oh, yeah, I worked on WWE 2K20.
Yeah, that game turned into a dumpster fire. But maybe next year will be better. That's what happens when you change development teams mid-development session.
Not with no slashed-ass budget. It ain't going to be better.
Who knows? I think they should just go to every other year. I don't think wrestling needs to be a yearly franchise like football. And
I don't know why football needs to be a yearly franchise.
Because it sells.
Well, that's all it's got going for it.
Yeah. Last bit of news that I have is that Nintendo announced a bunch of new games are coming to the Super Nintendo and NES online service on December 12th. The NES is getting two games with Crystalis and Journey to Silius. And then the Super Nintendo, they are getting a nice batch of games. Four games with Breath of Fire 2, which is fucking awesome. Okay. Super Punch-Out, which is fucking awesome. Kirby Superstar, which is fucking awesome. And Star Fox 2.
Huh.
Yeah, so there's kind of no reason to buy a Super NES Classic if you didn't get it. Because now Star Fox 2 is releasing on the Super Nintendo Online.
I'm not mad about that.
Me neither.
I think it's, considering I'll be making use of that, I'm definitely not mad about it.
What? You can't reveal secrets like that on the show. What if your children listen?
Yeah. See, that comment was vague enough that even if number one heard me, she doesn't have any idea what I'm talking about.
But yeah, four really good Super Nintendo games. I'm excited for those to launch. But yeah, that's the news I got. Anything you want to talk about?
No, I don't think so.
No, you want to just dive into reviews, speedrun this bitch?
Yeah, let's go. Actually, I forgot where I restarted the computer. I didn't open up my notes. Well, that would have been interesting to just wing it on everything.
Just what's wing it. Date?
Yeah, would have winged it. There we go.
You ready?
Yeah.
As Pickle tries eating the pen I'm holding. Pickle the Dickle.
Rootbeer is very excited about that revelation.
Well, it's exciting. You're getting a new console.
Yeah. Who knew I was capable of that?
You're going to be able to take on Switch reviews now.
Oh, damn.
Chris is going to be pissed. Creeping on his territory.
Sorry. I mean, if it makes it any easier, I only like roguelites and kids games, apparently, so it's fine.
Yeah, that works.
Are there Artifacts Monday games on there? Because let's go.
I don't know. I'm sure there are.
I'll be sitting at the doctor's office playing an Artifacts Monday game.
Oh, God. Getting needles in your spine while you're playing it.
Yes!
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Life is Strange 2, Episode 5, Wolves, code provided to us by Square Enix for the purpose of this review, because we have to say it with their games. Developed by Don't Nod Entertainment, published by Square Enix, who gave us this code for review. Released December 3rd on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $7.99. The full season is available for $39.99. In this explosive season finale, the Diaz brothers finally arrive at the Mexican border and reach the climactic end of their journey. Cole, tell us about it.
So when I reviewed the first four episodes of this, I kind of struggled because I had played them all in one go. And the story was melded together, and I was afraid of dropping spoilers.
Yeah.
So for the sake of this review, if you have not played episodes 1 through 4, turn this shit off.
Because there will be like spoilers. 15 minutes.
Yeah, there will be spoilers for 1 through 4, but I will not spoil episode 5. A lot of shit happens in Life is Strange 2. One of the things that gets me is this game goes from 0 to 60 in like an hour. You start off with, you know, two brothers who, okay, the story's already a little out there. One has magical powers and moves shit with his mind, and that's all well and good. And he accidentally kills a cop, and they go on the run. That's weird, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it goes from that to, oh, now the brothers are working on a pot farm, and oh, they're going to rob the pot farm, and that goes shady, and then all of a sudden there's an explosion, and one gets his eye, loses his eye, and another is joins a cult and is the miracle child sent by God all of a sudden. And you're like, where did this story go? what the fuck is happening here? And that was my entire experience. Normally, I bitch about the fourth episode of episodic games. Like, the fourth episode shoots shit everywhere and then leaves the fifth episode to clean it up. It's so weird. And yet, somehow, just the first four episodes of Life is Strange 2 were just all over the place chaotic. And even episode 3 and just it all piled up so much shit that by the time we got to 5, it was like, what the fuck can they possibly be left to do for these two? Just let these kids get in a car and get the fuck in Mexico and get it over with, because holy hell. And yet somehow they still managed to make that problematic for the finale. And it pulled on a lot of heartstrings. And there were moments where I didn't think I was as invested in the characters. I mean, I cried in, I think it was episode 2. And like, I had a teary-eyed moment. But for the rest of it, I was like, I'm not overwhelmingly invested in any of these NPC characters the way that I was with Max and Chloe.
Yeah.
And I couldn't quite put my finger on why. Like, yeah, I cared about the brothers and their relationship, but everybody else around them, I was just like, fuck you, yeah, I don't care. We're going to end up in a cult in 3 episodes, so who knows? So, I don't know if we'll ever even see your ass again. So then, by episode 5, I was kind of concerned, like, do I even care how this ends beyond these two? And somehow, Don't Nod knows what the fuck they're doing. Because I did. I did care. I cared what happened to the people around them. And I cared what happened to them. And without hitting into spoiler territory, they managed to remind me that this is part of the Life is Strange universe. And that there were other characters in this universe, and you were going to cross paths with people that they knew or them. And that was going to, that the stories were all going to intertwine. And I have
questions, but I feel that they would contain spoilers. Yeah.
It's a spoiler. Like, the moment it happened, I just sat back in my chair and I went, motherfucker. I didn't know there was anything left in this season that could stop me in my tracks. And there it was. And I just, like, I had a flood of emotions that I was afraid I was not going to have with this ending. And then the actual ending came, and I had to contemplate whether I had made the right kind of decisions for that ending. And if it was really the best thing that could have happened, or if there were other possibilities that maybe I fucked up and didn't get. And then I was concerned I wasn't going to have that feeling. Like, when Max and spoilers for the first Life is Strange, but when you have to decide, are Max and Chloe going to survive and go off into the sunset together, or are you going to save Arcadia Bay? Like, when you do one ending, you instantly have that feeling of, but what if I'd done the other one?
Yeah.
And so then when I got to the ending of Life is Strange 2, I didn't expect to have that feeling. I was going into it pretty confident in my decisions and like, well, I did what I thought was best every time. But then at the end, I kind of stopped and I was like, maybe I didn't. Maybe I could have done things a little better or worse. There's always the potential to fuck shit up somewhere.
Yeah.
So I was really, really surprised that they managed to evoke those kind of emotions because I was afraid I wasn't going to get there. The gameplay or the episode plays like literally every other Life is Strange. It doesn't even feel necessary to like go through all of that. I do want to say though, I had one crash issue toward the end of the game. Thankfully, it didn't fuck anything up. But it did, like, there was just a scene. The game had been playing fine. I'd been going about my merry way, finding my collectibles, doing well. And then it just stopped and crashed to the dashboard. And I was like, well, that sucks. And then I loaded it back up and I went on my merry way. Sometimes shit just happens. It's Xbox. I'm on an S. I feel like the S is decidedly more apt to crashing than the X. I can't prove that. But I do think that may be the case. But otherwise, it played well. It's absolutely gorgeous. Some of the scenery in the areas that the brothers go to will just take your breath away. Like, I wanted so badly to stop and take screenshots, but I was also afraid there may be people who would see it on my activity feed and be spoiled. Hmm. And so I didn't have the heart to do it. But yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. And I was really happy with the way that they took the story and ended it out.
Nice. Well, overall, is this a series worth investing your money in?
I think it's definitely one for Life is Strange fans. If you're already invested in that universe, then you're going to want to stick it out through. And it can be kind of hard because, like I said, it goes off the rails so hard. And Lizzie just kind of sitting there going, the fuck am I witnessing? But if you stick it out, the ending is certainly rewarding enough to make it to justify the trip.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, your overall verdict for $39.99 on the full series for the full series that Square Enix provided to us for the purpose of this review.
Thank you, Square Enix, for letting me play this game. Because I do give it a buy it. I think it's worth the money, absolutely.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Big Pharma, developed by Positech Games, published by Klebaiter, released December 5th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $29.99. What if you had it in your power to rid the world of disease, to improve the lives of millions, to ease suffering and cure the sick, and earn a tidy profit? Will you use it for good? The uncomfortable truth is that some remedies are more profitable than others, and illness is good for business. Welcome to the world of Big Pharma. Cole, tell us about it.
I mean, you could cure Alzheimer's, or you could make a treatment for warts and erectile dysfunction.
Yes, dick pills.
You could also be buried in crippling debt. I mean,
too real.
Management games.
Too real.
They have to have their downside, and usually loans are a good way to get that in there. So, Big Pharma is a management simulator, and you'll be researching and developing medicine and treatments, cures, for every kind of malady you could possibly imagine. Literally, from cancer to warts. I mean, but you don't have to, like you said in the summary, you don't have to flat out develop a cure just because you can. Sometimes you may want to just do a treatment because it's more financially beneficial. It's a little too realistic in that regard. And then you start to feel like shit when you're like, I could be curing cancer, but I'm profiting off of it.
Yeah.
And then you go, never mind. I'm finally going to beat this scenario. It's fine. So the game gives you free play options, but there are different scenarios if you want to challenge. Starts off with tutorials. They explain to you how to not be a dumbass, because getting the hang of managing this game is really difficult. There's a steep learning curve involved with Big Pharma. And I'm used to simulators that will pop up and like give you a sentence or two of information here or there as it walks you through. This game just has a big block of text in the corner that you can't get rid of. And it tells you everything at once, and you just have to keep referring to it like you're looking at a textbook. But once you do get the hang of like how it's all managed, it's very well set up, if that makes sense. Like the controller bindings are fine, but also the menus and the UI, all of it's fairly self-explanatory. The hardest part is it doesn't always explain, or the not necessarily explain, the way that you lay out the conveyor belts when you're setting up your factories is not as well designed as the rest, because in a lot of games like this, those something that has to be laid out like a car or a train track or a car road or a conveyor belt in this instance tends to like auto arrange itself. Whereas in Big Pharma, it does not. And you have to keep clicking through it just by pressing the button to get it to change directions for the belt. And sometimes you will want just like a 90 degree angle and it will not give a fuck. And it will constantly give you a crossroads. And if you just go, fuck it, whatever, take the crossroads, it's still going to turn. It won't. And so then you're stuck there for 10 more minutes until you finally get it to pop up the 90 degree angle going the direction you want. That was my biggest complaint about it. And the tutorial for all the shit it teaches you doesn't teach you how to deal with that. It's literally just hit the button, figure it out. Good luck. And it's okay. Well,
peace.
You want to write me a novel for every other thing that I'm going to do in this game. But for the actual conveyor belts, which are the bread and butter for how you lay out your factory, you're just like, good luck, bitch. For the different challenges, you have your basic difficulties, like, you know, beginner, intermediate, advanced. But then you can also get into some scenarios where, like I said before, you have crippling debt. You have a starting budget, but you also have a loan that you have to pay back. Which may affect some of the decisions you make and the types of medication that you choose to make. Each scenario, on top of its beginner situation with like your budget and your map size and all that, will also have 5 different unique challenges. Every scenario has a different set of challenges. The challenges can range from create a treatment for warts and erectile dysfunction. I keep going back to that because I just find that a funny one.
You just like your dick pills.
Yeah.
Speaking of dicks.
Dick pills are important. But another one may say cure cancer within 7 years. Or create a drug that has $1 million profit. Or create a drug that can cure 2 ailments. There's an achievement for creating a drug that cures Alzheimer's, cures HIV, and is a cancer vaccine all in one.
Jeez.
Some of these combinations of medications get downright unruly. And again, that's where that steep learning curve comes in and learning how to manufacture the pills properly. It's definitely not an easy pick-up and play management sim, but it is kind of amusing and rewarding once you figure it out.
Cool. So aside from the lack of tutorial on the conveyor belts, sounds like an overall decent package.
Yeah, I would give it a recommended try it, but I think the difficulty is a turnoff for a lot of people with this game. But if you are super into management sims, then you're not going to want to miss out on it because it is well done otherwise.
Does that mean you were addicted to it?
I had to delete it. I've just learned now, like, as soon as I put in my review time and I feel confident with the review, I'm like, you have to get off my hard drive because I have other shit to do.
That's the sign of a good game from you. Delete it, that's a good indication that you have a winner.
Yeah. I get sucked in really hard.
Nice.
And I saw myself preemptively as like, I have a busy week ahead and I cannot do this.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Seek Hearts, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released December 4th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. With questions swirling in his mind about why he was created and by who, Aizen sets out on a journey to discover his origins. However, as he and those with him pursue answers to this mystery, they fail to notice a shadow creeping up upon them with the intent to stop them in their tracks. As you could tell, this is the latest retro RPG from Chemco. The story follows Aizen and his band of followers as they try to find out the origin story of Aizen, who is, I believe they refer to him as mechanoids in the game, basically cyborgs, half human, half machine. He's a Terminator, basically. Yeah. it brings together a lot of the classic hits of Chemco and their mechanics. We cover a lot of times how they have the weapons eat weapons to strengthen the weapons aspect of the games. In this one, you're actually using old weapons to power up Aizen himself in either strength, intelligence, speed, defense, hit points, and you power him up that way instead of just traditional leveling. Like, his hit points won't really grow that much unless you feed him equipment specifically for hit points. Like, you have to choose which stats you want to focus on leveling up. I, of course, put everything into strength so I could just steamroll everybody as I play.
Cheater pants.
No, that's not cheating. That's just focusing on strength and kicking people's asses. What I enjoyed about the previous game, where they had those little terminals in dungeons that let you either set the encounter rate or instantly fight three battles, those are back in this game, which I absolutely love. They make grinding such a pleasure in these games. Like, instead of walking back and forth, hoping for random battles, you just fight them at your whim and take them out and focus on grinding for a bit. And then you could set the encounter rate low and just work your way through the dungeons and explore. And it really streamlines the RPG aspect of the game. And I love it for it. I love these terminals. I love the ability to just immediately set encounters. It's the convenience is just off the charts with this. I love it. Nice. They have the Chemco stalwarts of the arena battles that you could do. They have the in-game item shop that you could get with experience boosters and gold boosters. I focused, like, you got the in-game currency for this one so much after battles. I was getting the currency that I already bought all three of the experience boosters. I bought a gold booster. I bought a bunch of keys for the storehouses that you could go into. This one seems so much easier than some of the other Chemco RPGs that I've covered on the show. It seems so focused on making sure that the user has a satisfying, quick, enjoyable experience instead of drawing things out like some of the other ones have. It seems the more we get into these Chemco games, the more they improve them, and the more the mechanics just encourage players to go as far as they can in the game. Gameplay-wise, it's what you would expect from a Chemco game. It has the traditional 16-bit style graphics, the overworld, the dungeons, turn-based battles. The animations are really nice. It is basically a greatest hits of Chemco games. The story's really cool. getting, you get all your party members fairly early in the game, which is nice. Instead of, you know, I have one person, then two people for an hour, and then three people for 2 hours, and then finally meet the fourth person. This one, in about the first hour, you had all four party members ready to go.
Wow.
Which was nice.
Yeah, that's unusual for a Kimco game.
Yeah, they threw them all at you right off the bat, and it's like, here's your party, go have fun, go do what you want to do. Yeah, the game it's just a really, really solid RPG. I love that Kemco is still bringing these RPGs to Xbox. You know I'm going to give it a buy it just because it's an RPG on Xbox One, and I encourage people to buy RPGs on Xbox One, but it just seems the more that we get of these, the more improvements and quality of life improvements they add to the games, and the better they are getting. And I can't help but give this one another buy it because it's just enjoyable to play. It's super streamlined. It's got a cool story. It just wants you to come back and play more. And they have fairies that you can tickle.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, you know, in some games where you could like plant seeds and stuff like that. In this one,
yeah.
This one, they have three dishes that you could put treats on, and there's a stocking that you catch a fairy in who will leave you a present. If you go in there and the fairy is in the stocking, you can tickle the fairy just by mashing the A button, and they'll give you another bonus item, like a stat booster, and then you have the actual gift that they leave you. You gotta make sure that you tickle them before you take the gift, because if you take the gift first, they fly away.
Oh, wow.
So just make sure that you tickle the fairies. Dark Meek, you tickle the fairy. This sounds dirty. It's adorable. And you get to tickle these cute fairies and get stat boosters, and it's good shit. I love it. So, yeah, buy this one.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that they just keep improving.
I know. I'm thrilled that they're getting better. I'm thrilled that they're getting more streamlined, that they, you know, so many of their additional purchases that they have, like double experience, triple SP, stuff like that, they're not really necessary to get the most out of the game like they were in the earlier games, where you would have to buy a no encounter,
yeah,
a no encounter bonus or stuff like that. It's good that they have those abilities just built into the game now, and those added purchases don't feel so necessary to enjoy it.
Good.
Next game is a preview of the game Don't Die Minerva, developed and published by Xavient, released December 5th on Xbox One Game Preview and Steam Early Access for $19.99. On a dark and stormy night, a little girl named Minerva discovers a haunted house deep in the woods, and before she knows it, she's in for the fight for her life. The forces of evil don't stand a chance against 11-year-old Minerva and her trusty flashlight. Cole, tell us about Don't Die Minerva.
So, this game is incredibly adorable and also very dark. Minerva has found herself at a haunted mansion, and there is a headless butler who you can talk to. He is a ghost, and his head is on the platter that he carries around. Again, very macabre and dark. Even though Minerva is like a 7-year-old girl. If you've ever seen the cartoon Ruby Gloom, it kind of reminds me of that, in that like everything is dark and dreary and goth, and then there's just like this happy little kid stuck in the middle of it. It plays as a roguelite, surprisingly enough. Almost like, I guess in a way you'd call it a dungeon crawler. It's like if you took Isaac and made it a 3D game, but put a little girl in it and gave her a flashlight instead of tears, and had ghosts popping up out of the floor at her after all the time. There's a lot of similar gameplay mechanics with like your traditional roguelites, like Binding of Isaac and Story Goes On and games of that nature. You go from room to room throughout the mansion. You start off on the first floor, and you'll gradually work your way up. Not every floor has a boss battle. That seems to be that it only occurs like every 2 or 3 floors instead of every floor. So there's not always a dedicated boss room. What you'll do is you'll fight and clear out enemies and go from room to room. You'll collect additional items. There's always a blood fountain on every floor. And the blood fountain can be used if you will put your coin in it. Then it will take you back to the hub world outside, where you can give crystals that you have collected in the mansion to the ghosts that you have unlocked for different upgrades, or you can visit the store.
I just like the idea of a blood fountain.
It's literally like this big thing rises up out of the middle of it and teleports you, and it's blood. Like I said, it's very gory and macabre, and you're a little 7-8-year-old girl wandering around. to the point that one of the items that you can pick up for her is her backpack. And I mean, it's like sometimes it's a polar bear backpack or it's a little dragon backpack, and it's so super adorable, but they all have different abilities. So you can modify Minerva's stats with her gear. So if you find better boots, then she'll move faster, for example, or it could give her the ability to add burn or do more damage to burning enemies, which is kind of funny given that the flashlight is your weapon. So then like you can add burn or freeze to it, or you can find upgrades for the flashlight. You can find ones, for example, that will shoot orbs almost like Isaac Tears, or you can have ones that are plasma, which I thought were incredible. That was the best one by far. Give me the plasma flashlight every chance you've got. I'm like, yes, because that shit sparks from enemy to enemy, take out a whole room. In addition to finding the different gear, you can also find companions. These are literally plush animals. Like, you start off always level 1 with a monkey. And it's a plush monkey that you set it down and has an area of effect. And it throws bananas at the ghosts. And you can equip your gear with gems that you find in the mansion to add different status effects. So you may have the monkey, but you equip a sapphire to it, and now the bananas have the ability to freeze the ghosts. Or you may have a teddy bear that does like a slam move, and if it hits the area of effect, and you could put a ruby on it, and then anything that gets caught by that slam is going to burn. So there's a lot of different ways to build up Minerva's abilities and modify the way that your run is going. I didn't expect this game to be that deep. I was like, oh, you run in with your flashlight, kill some ghosts, call it a day. But no, there's a full-fledged roguelite system in place. You do have to bank your crystals before you move to another floor. You don't have to bank them. But if you die, they're gone. You're shit out of luck. However, if you do go back using the fountain and bank them with one of the ghosts, then if you die and you come back, you don't lose them. They're already in place, and those go count toward permanent upgrades. I started the game initially on normal, and I was like, holy fucking shit, this is hard. I'm dying a lot. I can't manage this. What am I doing wrong? And then I discovered that I could set it down to easy and not lose any of my progress.
That's nice.
That was made on normal. Likewise, I can set it to easy, move it to hard, and not lose my progress. So if I change the difficulty, I still have all of the power-ups that I've earned through previous runs and put into it. It doesn't go, fuck you, you've lost all that. I am so grateful for that. Because I was really, really struggling on normal. And I was like, I don't know how this is supposed to be normal. I do kind of feel like easy gets to a point where it is too easy. Once you've learned the mechanics of the game and where you're going to find the crystals and how you should be using them, and you've got one or two upgrades, then you're just like, okay, but I'm annihilating everything now. It would be nice if the step up from easy to normal wasn't such a big gap. Because you can go from I'm mutilating everything to I'm dying in the first two rooms.
Yeah.
Very fast. Even with upgrades, you're just like, what the fuck am I doing wrong on normal that I am not doing on easy? So that is probably the most difficult thing with the game, is just that difficulty spike is too dramatic. The game is in game preview, though, so there's plenty of time for them to take feedback modify the game, and it can grow in so many different ways. And there's so much potential for where this game could go that I can't wait to see it follow through and actually come out of Game Pass or Game Preview. Lord, not don't come out of Game Pass. Go into Game Pass. Game Pass clearly doesn't have enough games. But I can't wait to see what they do with the feedback they get from being in game preview and how it helps the game grow.
Nice. So overall, $20 on this one. Is it worth keeping an eye on? Is it worth investing in right now?
I would say I'm not supposed to give a full on like review score or number for it. But I do think if you're interested in these kind of games and roguelites, Don't Die Minerva is one you should keep your eye on. Absolutely.
Nice.
Yay.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Tools Up, developed by the Knights of Unity, published by All In Games. It released December 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. Tools Up is an exciting party co-op, letting you test your renovation and teamwork skills, paint walls, tear off wallpaper, and move couches against the clock. Cole, tell us about Tools Up.
Have you ever been playing Overcooked and wished that instead of cooking, you were renovating an apartment?
I'm guessing this is that game.
This is that game. It's nice. One of those games that you never really thought you needed, but you definitely want it. It plays out very similar to Overcooked. Now, there is a single player mode, and there is a party mode. If you are playing in single player, then you have an array of apartments set up in an apartment building, and you literally go from door to door to unlock each new renovation level. Sometimes you're renovating apartments, sometimes they're houses. Sometimes they're in different biomes where it could be nice and sunny, or you could be in a high rise, or you could be in covered in snow. It gets a little crazy, much like Overcooked. You are not limited to playing the campaign in a single player capacity, though. Even that can be played with up to 4 players local co-op. I wish that this had online multiplayer, because I could see getting into this game with a bunch of friends, much like I do with Overcooked. Mm-hmm. And just like having a late night, throwing shit at each other and laughing about it. Unfortunately, it is local, so it's just me yelling at number one to pick up the paint cans. Don't leave the paint can! If you leave a paint can...
Instead of yelling at Jacob to not throw the rice.
Right. You leave a paint can. If you trip over the paint can, then you spill the paint, and then you gotta clean it up, and that adds more time to your renovation, and then you might not get 3 stars. And who wants that to happen?
Not
me. You have to 3-star every one of them, whether you like it or not. The more people that you throw into this, the more difficult it gets. That's one of the ways that it differs from a game like Overcooked, because Overcooked is definitely designed in such a way that when you've got more people, you've got more hands, and it works out better, and the flow is a little more casual. It can be a little more hectic if people that you're playing with aren't, like, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Jacob.
Yeah.
But if you've got a rhythm down and you've got people who know what they're doing, you're going to do well. It does not matter in Tools Up. if you know what you're doing or not. Because it's such a small confined space and your renovators are little pudgy people, they're bumping and bouncing into each other. There's trash cans and paint flying and carpet, and it just gets unruly. I think it's a lot of fun, but I did have some issues with the way that the levels are designed. When you go into a building that you're going to renovate, there's usually a blueprint and it will tell you what you need to do to pass that level. The blueprint will be broken down into like living room, kitchen, or, you know, whatever areas that you have that you need to renovate. But when you're actually looking at those rooms in practice, it can be really difficult to tell which one is supposed to be which. And especially like the more open concept style levels, you're just like, okay, but where does the living room end and the kitchen begin? I can't figure that out. And this is made a little worse when the game's like, oh, the living room should be yellow and the kitchen should be orange. And you're like, the shades of yellow and orange that they used are so close to each other that it can be really difficult to tell. Like, one of the first achievements I got in the game was for using the wrong color paint, because you just can't tell. It's like, well, I guess that's a yellow.
I love when games have achievements yellow. Like that. It's like, you fucked up. Here's an achievement.
Oh, there are plenty of you fucked up achievements for this game, because you're going to fuck up a lot. It would be nice, though, if there was just some kind of like little icon somewhere on the HUD, even if it was just like in a lower corner, have like a little sofa or a kitchen table or something to let you know you've gone from the kitchen into the dining room or living room or the bedroom or whatever, just so that you can,
know what room you're in.
Make apples and oranges out of those blueprints, yeah. Because otherwise it's just like, all it does is show you orange floor in this room, orange walls in that room, but it doesn't show you where that room is in the level.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but that's confusing. And when you're racing a clock to try to get star points and not fuck up, that's even worse. Because then that's a forced replay until you figure out where those rooms were.
Yeah.
Which everybody knows, I don't like anything that kind of forces you into a replay. If you want to replay it, great, but you shouldn't be forced into it. Just to figure out where the fuck a room is. Beyond that, playing party mode and playing the game single player with a party, it's a ton of fun. It plays really well. It's just that it would be nice with a little fine tuning for hold my hand a little.
Yeah. And that's add online.
And add online.
Because that's just flip of a switch. We all know that by now.
Easy peasy. You just click a button and go, the button says, do you want net code? And you click yes.
And then it works magically. It
works, and it's cross play against all platforms, and it's perfectly fine.
Yep.
Easy peasy.
Yes. So $20 on this one, what do you think?
I think the price is a little high for what it is. There's a ton of great levels, but it's hard to want to like keep progressing when you can't figure out where you are or what you're doing, and you're being forced to redo levels to try to get stars. I think if it were on sale, if it were a little lower, then I'd be more of a oh my gosh, buy this, it's so much fun. But at $20, I'd lean more toward a recommended try it.
That works.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Interrogation You Will Be Deceived, developed by Critique Gaming, published by Mixed Vision, released December 5th on PC for $19.99. As a police detective tasked with bringing down a dangerous terrorist group, you fight on two fronts, interrogating suspects and managing your team and its reputation. With time running out, how far will you go to stop these criminals? Manipulation, threats, or even torture? Does the end justify the means? Our friend Serlina checked this one out, and this is what she's got to say. Hey SML gamers, it's Serlina, and this week I am reviewing Interrogation You Will Be Deceived, developed by Critique Gaming. In this noir stylized game, you play as a newly appointed detective who specializes in interrogations. Very quickly, you will discover that there is a terrorist group afoot, and it's up to you to ask the right questions, listen for the right responses, and get those confessions to save the city. First off, the game is absolutely gorgeous. I love the style of the game. I feel like I was just put into a 1920s film, and the iconography of the police station is just perfect. You've got the half-open blinds, the ashtray full of cigarette butts, ceiling fan going above you. You feel like you're in a police precinct. One of the little touches that I appreciate is that the characters you meet, each of them have stress lines across their faces. It's just a little touch that makes my heart soar. The gameplay is fairly simple as it's story-based, so point and click to your heart's desire. However, this is not an easy game, and there's a lot you have to look out for. The game has a good tutorial, and you'll want to pay attention to the information given. There are two meters that will assist you in getting those confessions. The first meter is the heart rate meter. The faster it goes, the more the suspect is afraid of you. The second is the eye dilation meter. As the pupils expand, it makes the suspect more open and willing to tell you things. It's up to you to figure out which suspect is more susceptible to which techniques, meaning will the suspect tell you the truth based on fear or on empathy. There are consequences to your actions in this game, which I love. For example, using the wrong technique will make the suspect clam up and you'll fail the interrogation. Also, you have other officers that can help you with different aspects of the case. They each have their own feelings, thoughts, and motivations. What you say to them, what you do, what assignments you give them, all accept their feelings towards you and the case. If they don't like you enough, they are more susceptible to failing tasks, and if they really don't like you, they'll stop working with you. Another aspect that I really enjoyed about the game is the fact that there are outside forces that you have to account for as well. These forces are the media, the general public, and the politicians. You don't necessarily have to keep them happy, but the interviews you give, the press releases that you type, affect these outside forces. So if the public thinks you're going to keep them safe, you get an empathy boost that helps you in your interrogations. However, if the public thinks you're a pig, you get a fear-based type of boost. It's an incredibly complex reward system, and it's up to you to pick which boosts you want to shoot for depending on your playstyle. There are a couple things I didn't enjoy that interrupted my enjoyment of the game. First, this is a text-based game. That's fine with me, but what's not fine are the typos I found in the game. I'll excuse one typo in this type of game. After that, I'm going to consider the writing and editing a bit sloppy. Also, continuity is an issue. For example, I had a conversation with one of the members of my task force. The conversation was largely good and helped me, but it was also about something I couldn't have known about because it was classified in her dossier. I didn't have access to this knowledge, and there I am having this conversation. Interrogation You Will Be Deceived is available on Steam for $20, and should you buy this game, oh dear gods, yes. I am completely in love with it. It is everything I could ever want in a text-based game. It is gorgeous, the characters are compelling, the threats feel real, and I love unraveling this story. You will be better for playing this game. That is high praise.
Yeah, it really is.
That is, like, impressively high praise.
I don't know that I've ever said that, and I've gave some pretty high rewards in games in reviews before, so.
It sounds like a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, next game to talk about is called Simulacra. Hopefully I said it right. Developed by Kagan Games, published by Wales Interactive, released December 3rd on Xbox One for $11.99. You found the lost phone of a woman named Anna. In it, you see a desperate cry for help in the form of a video message. The phone behaves strangely as you dive deeper into it. You talk to her friends and they have no idea where she is. Her text, emails, and photo gallery provide fragments of information. It's up to you to piece it all together. Cole, tell us about it.
Okay. So, best that I could gather, this was a spiritual successor to a mobile game known as Sarah is Missing. I haven't ever played that game. But the entirety of Simulacra takes place on Anna's phone, which takes up a good chunk of your screen, and then there's like a blurry room in the background that you can't really see a lot of detail on. You're just a random person, you, and Anna's phone has wound up on your doorstep, and so you start to go through the phone and trying to unlock it and find out some information about Anna so that you can try to give her phone back to her. But the more you dig through the last few interactions on her phone, the more you discover that Anna's life had been upended and she could be in danger, and you may need to not only, you know, help her, but enlist her contacts and people that she had relationships with online and through texting and other communication means to try to help save her. I didn't expect this to be as spooky of a game as it was. this is an intense game, considering you're doing nothing more than looking through a mobile phone. There are literally moments where, like, you're just holding your breath and hoping it turns out okay and that you've made the right steps along the way. it's amusing how it plays out through apps, but I think it's a little unnerving how easy it is to track down Anna's data, even though it's the apps in the game are very similar to apps we would use in real life. There's times where it'll come up and say, oh, in order to get access to this app of Anna's, you need to know her pet's birthday. Well, if you go to the gallery and you look, there's pictures of Anna holding her cat with a birthday hat that says happy birthday, Tobias. And then, of course, they're dated in the gallery. So then you just have to go back to the app and put in the date that was in the gallery, and you're in. You're into her private details, and you can access her life. You can access her social media. You can access her emails and her contacts, and you can choose whether or not you reach out to people as her or whether you tell people the truth about what's actually going on with her. It's a little unnerving. Like, the more you go into it, the more you're like, after you play, you're just like, I need to go tighten my security a little bit. That's quite an online breadcrumb trail. It's an incredibly twisty narrative. There may or may not be supernatural elements. Occasionally the phone likes to glitch out. There's one very heart pumping moment where, the phone may reset if you don't come up with the correct answers in the right amount of time. Then it's game over. Game over, man. Game over. Because the phone just wipes and you no longer have access to her info anymore.
That's pretty cool. That's a nice touch.
So well done. There's multiple endings. There's multiple characters. It does play out. I've not been shy that I've developed a love of the FMV games after playing the Shapeshifting Detective. So I was really into this one just from the screenshots from it. I'm like, oh, give me. And I was not disappointed. I really did enjoy it. One of the things that I've enjoyed the most about it is that it's easy to go back to. And every time there's different choices you can make in different plot lines. Like, I feel like I'm never going to find all the potential endings. I'm just going to keep going forever.
Do you know how many endings there are?
I want to say that there's 4, but there's a lot of different paths to get you to those 4. So, I mean, you could make very similar but slightly different decisions and end up with a different ending.
Nice.
Yeah, number one was playing it as well, and like we were comparing our notes because there's a lot of, do I trust this person that I'm talking to? Are they going to tell me the truth? Do I tell them the truth? And so, like, we were comparing notes of how we had gone through at different points and the different decisions we'd made and the different responses we got. We were cross-referencing.
I like how your daughter is basically slave labor for the show now.
It was her choice. Like, she was totally into playing the game. She had seen me play a little bit of it, and she beat it before I did.
Wow.
The first time around. And I was like, wait a second, because she took a sick day off from school and was like, here I am. Pump this game into my veins. She was very into it, which is also high praise. Number one is kind of picky. It takes a lot to get her away from Assassin's Creed, and Simulacra did it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So overall, $12, what do you think?
I give it a solid buy it. It played perfectly. It was the acting and everything was really well done. I was very impressed.
Nice. Sounds like a winner.
Yeah.
All right. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Rift Keeper, developed by Frymore, published by Sometimes You. This one's releasing December 10th on Xbox One and PS4, the 17th on the Switch for $9.99. Embark on your journey, travel through rifts, and restore the balance as the Rift Keeper in this handcrafted 2D roguelike platformer with challenging, fast-paced action gameplay. Cole, tell us about it.
So can I be perfectly honest?
Yes.
And say, which I'm perfectly honest with all of my reviews, but sometimes you has a reputation. And their reputation is that most of their games are a little on the not best side. Some of them can be a little more fun than others. Some of them are just really good for quick achievements. I will stand by the fact that I loved One-Eyed Kutk and what was the other, the gym one, Metropolis, Los Metropolis or something like that?
Lux Obscura, I think.
Yeah, Lux Obscura, blah, 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 something.
Words.
That one was, yeah, it's not time for words. That one I'm a little more on the shady end of. But I didn't have a lot of hope for Rift Keeper because it was a sometimes cute game. I'm kind of sorry for that.
Yeah, they've had some good games. I think you're kind of pigeonholing them
moments.
Poorly.
They've had some, like I said, I liked One-Eyed Kutk, and I will stand by that one when everybody else rips on it. So, I mean, you know, it's hit or miss. But I didn't have a lot of hope. Roguelites are hard to get right. And Rift Keeper is a roguelite. And you can very quickly, with roguelites, find yourself in a position where if all the elements don't come together, it's just obscenely hard with no payoff. And my first couple of runs with Rift Keeper, I was like, oh fuck, here we go. It's obscenely hard and there's no payoff. And I'm not happy about this. When you die, you die. You lose your gold. You lose your weapons. You lose everything. Start over. Fuck you. Get back in there. The story, it's a little light on it. The premise is that there are red rifts and you need to go in them and clear the enemies out away from them. It's very cut and dry. They don't really build on it a whole lot because roguelite. that tends to be what they do. But, it's got a very, very pixelated art style. There's almost like there's a Dead Cells type of inspiration going on here. I wouldn't say that it's nearly as in-depth or involved as Dead Cells, but you can see where there's some similarities. Which is fine. It happens. Initially, your character starts off with, like, a chain that he uses as a whip and jack shit else. You got crummy health, you got crummy damage, and you're gonna go into the rift. You have to clear out 9 rifts just to get to the first boss.
Wow.
Good luck. I made it to 7. Oh. And I cannot get past 7 to save myself.
So
and
close.
I have made it to 7 multiple times. Can't get past it.
It's a hard game.
Yes. So when you go into the rift, like I said, initially you start off with just your chain whip and that's that. There are enemies, there's some platforming, you can jump, you can double jump. Double jump, when I first started the game, for some reason it didn't seem like double jump was all that effective. Like, I really thought there were huge areas I just couldn't get to, and I couldn't figure out why. And I would jump, and I'd try to double jump, and nothing would happen. And then all of a sudden, I jumped, and then like instinctively double jumped, and that time it worked. And it was fine after that. I don't know what I did different between working and not working. And sometimes that shit just happens. But I was very relieved when it did work, because then I could actually explore these dungeons like you were probably should have. But you'll leap around. There's no map. There's no rooms to go into. It's all contained in one room. Excuse me, sir. It's all properly contained in one room, and you just wander around it kind of aimlessly. There are multiple rift portals that will get you back out of the dungeon, but you can only go through those once you have cleared 70% of the enemies. Now, there's also a timer that comes, that counts down as well. If you clear 70% of the enemies and leave the rift and go back to the town before that timer is gone, you will get 2 bonus chests for your reward when you get back in town instead of just one. Those bonus chests are your bread and butter because you have a chance to unlock the higher end weapons out of them that can really make or break your run. Especially if you, I know.
I was just over there and offered to let you out and you didn't want to have no part of it.
Meow. It's raining and I know as soon as I open the door, he's going to be like, what's wrong with you, human? So those weapons can really make or break whether or not you get through your runs. My downside, really though, the downside and complaint about those bonus chests and even the regular chests that you'll get just for completing the rift, there's nothing to stop you from getting junk in them. So you may bust your ass, go through a really difficult run, come out of it and think, oh, I'm going to get a large amount of gold, or I might look out and get a really good weapon. And then you open it and it's nothing but a broken mirror shard worth 5 gold. That's bullshit.
That's harsh.
That also happens with just the regular reward chests. Now, sometimes there are chests littered around in the dungeons, and I can see putting junk and things like that in those to, cause they're not overwhelmingly difficult to get. But your bonus chests and your reward chests, especially when you are on higher level, dungeons, absolutely should not be throwing you $5 broken mirror shards.
No.
Look, you only want to put 100 gold in it or whatever, fine. But it shouldn't be throwing literal things that the game labels as junk.
Yeah, that's kind of mean.
That sucks. Because you desperately need those upgrades to get by. I don't think there was ever a point in any of my runs where I was wealthy enough to buy any of the higher level gear either. Give me just a moment.
Kitty making noise. And I have my kitty next to me, Piddles. Hi, Piddle Bear. This is all staying in the show. All of it. I feel like trash, so it's just staying in here because I don't feel like editing anything this week.
I lost that standoff. I was like, you'll hush in a minute. No, I won't. but I was never able to purchase any of the high-end stuff. Even when I was having runs that were making it to floor 6 and 7, even when I would purposely not purchase things for several runs in hopes of just earning enough money to be able to get something, I never had more than 10,000 gold on me at any point in time.
Jeez.
Never. Some of these items cost 120,000 and you're like, no. Never going to be able to buy that. No matter what I do, never going to be able to buy that. So a little more balance in the cost of the weapons and their likelihood to drop in the chest would be a big help.
No.
The junk chest, that's just heartbreaking and shouldn't happen. But if you luck out and you have a good run, it does feel a lot more satisfying, but it's also amazing how you can have one run where you make it to, one of the higher level dungeons, and then the very next run, you could die on the second platform.
Yeah.
It just shits the bed very quickly when it wants to shit the bed. You lose everything except for some of your gold. I can't figure out exactly how much gold is being lost on a death run. I don't know if it's like a percentage of all your gold. I know I started off I started a run with 6,000 and I died and I hadn't bought anything. And the next run I had 5,000 and I was like, wait a second. I lost all the gold from that run and then some. I don't get it. So I couldn't figure out what the fuck the metrics are for that, and I'm still a little frustrated about that. And again, that takes away the satisfactory part of it because you don't feel like you're getting anywhere or actually progressing. One other minor complaint The pixel art is really well done. Even with all that I've been complaining about pixel art lately, it's surprisingly well done. Especially for all the different creatures that you'll encounter and everything. But in the dungeons, sometimes it can be difficult to tell where platforms actually begin and end because there's nothing setting them apart from the background. It's very monochromatic in each one. There's not a whole lot of shading or shadows to really pull those platforms forward so that you can tell and don't just walk off the end and land in some spikes, which sucks.
Yeah.
I don't like just surprisingly finding spikes. you know, but if they would, you know, work on that a little bit more polish and some fine tuning, and I would be a lot happier, but I was still pleasantly surprised with how it turned out.
Nice. Well, as it stands for $10, what do you say?
I'd give it a solid try it. Yeah. I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Which is good.
Yes. It's always a positive scenario when I'm like, motherfucker, I'm going back at that.
Always. Always, always. I have Piddle staring at me over here. She's just like begging for attention.
Pay attention to the kitty.
The worst part with her is that, like, I'll turn to her and I'll be like, come on, hop on my lap, and she'll run away. So wow. She sits there demanding attention. I go to give it to her, and she runs. Come on. No, you're just going to sit there? You pain in the ass, you? You are such a dick. Oh, my Lord. Anyway, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to Greg for coming on and chatting with us about the game and all the fun stuff. And it's been a long one. I'm tired.
Yeah, but it was a good show.
It was.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're less sick for the next episode.
No, I will never be less sick, but it sounds good.
I feel like I've just gotten worse over the course of the episode.
Yes, it does seem that way, huh?
I started off all happy and chipper, and now at the end I'm just like dragging ass.
No, I do hope you get feeling better.
Oh, I'm going to die before then. Yeah, that is it for this episode. Do you have any final words to end it all?
No.
Nothing?
No. Yeah, I'm good.